My name is Mike Hawkins, and we've got, I guess, an hour and 15 minutes, right? 45 minutes, and then half hour Q&A after that. I'd like to keep this as informal and conversational as possible, so please, at any point, feel free to jump in with questions and comments and ask me to clarify or for more details. That would be great. I'm going to be talking about Kingdom Builders, which is a ministry that operates out of New Life Presbyterian Church in Dresher. And what Kingdom Builders is a ministry, sort of a handyman type ministry of home repair and maintenance to help out those people with those types of needs who don't have the finances to hire somebody to do it or the skill to do it themselves or the support network in terms of family or small group or whatever to help them do those things. So first of all, to introduce myself, my family and I worship at New Life Presbyterian Church in Dresher, and I'm not a deacon or an elder or an officer of the church or anything, but just somebody who God really grabbed hold of with the idea for this ministry a couple of years ago. And I'm going to tell you the story of how the ministry got started, how it came to be, and where we are at this point. To be totally honest, we're still figuring stuff out, and it's been an interesting process, so I'm going to tell you that story. A couple of things about me that I'll say that led me to this. So my day job, I work for Johnson & Johnson doing drug discovery, doing chemistry, so building molecules. So I like building things. That's fact number one. Fact number two is, in 1999, my wife and I bought a house that was built in 1900, which pretty much stopped being looked after around about the time when Teddy Roosevelt was president. So basically, every surface in the house needed to be redone. So we knew we were never going to have the money to pay contractors to do all of this stuff. Some of it we were going to hire people to do. But a lot of it we knew we were going to be doing ourselves. So I figured I'd better learn some stuff about working on houses. And it was funny, I remember at the time thinking, I'd rather have the skill than the money anyway. And I really felt like this is something where I think that as I develop these skills, that God could really use that as I use them to help other people. So that was another kind of fact that sort of predisposed me to this kind of ministry. So a little bit about Kingdom Builders and what it is that we try to do. The vision of the ministry is really to be a proclamation ministry. So we really want to proclaim the good news to people. We really want to be able to say, Jesus loves you to people. And the way that we do that is that we show up at their house and we help them out with problems that they have. So I guess it strikes some people as odd to think of that as first and foremost a proclamation ministry because it's so much about doing. But we really like to think of it in those terms. So who do we help? The people that we really want to reach out to are people who have problems with practical things around the home, who don't have the skill to take care of it themselves, as I said, who can't hire somebody and who don't have people in their support network that are there to help them. And that last point's an important one because we really don't see the ministry as being a primary sort of support network. It's there to catch people who have fallen through several, other possible levels of support and don't really have anybody to help them out with these problems. So it is a diaconal type ministry, although it's not synonymous with the diaconate. As you'll hear, one of the guys who helps to lead it is a deacon, and that's a real key component of the leadership of the group. But I think, if you're going to draw a diagram of it, it would be something like this, where this is diaconate, and then this circle is Kingdom Builders, and there's a big overlap, obviously, in the middle there. But there's also some things that set us apart from sort of what you might think of as typical diaconal work. I think we've got maybe a bigger scope and more of an opportunity for some outreach kinds of things that we've done. So you'll hear some stories. I want to tell some stories of some neat partnerships that have come up between Kingdom Builders and other churches and some other ministries as well. That's been really exciting. And then also some neat outreach stuff that's happened through Kingdom Builders. One of the things that I'd like to do, I don't know where you guys are coming from in terms of this, but if there's anybody here who's thinking of starting this type of ministry or some other sort of practical helps ministry, I really want to encourage you with the story of how this one came about. Like I said, we're still figuring it out. We don't have it all buttoned down or anything like that. But I hope it'll be encouraging. One of the things that we do also is that we discover needs. A lot of the needs that we address aren't necessarily the kind that are jumping out at you. But when you let people know that you're available to help for this kind of thing, you find out that there's a lot of hidden need out there and some real, we've been able to help some people who might not otherwise probably have been helped. In a practical sense, so like what actually are we talking about here? What do we do? So a typical job that we would do would be small carpentry, plumbing, electric, painting, yard work, general labor. There's this big bureau that needs to be moved from point A to point B. This carpet needs to be rolled up and thrown out. Helping people with moving, just all kinds of work like that. This is probably very much preaching to the choir here, but I want to say some things about why do this? Why do we think that God has called us to this kind of ministry? And through James, the Lord says this: "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress." So one of the things we like to think about is, who are those modern day, maybe not literal, but figuratively speaking, widows and orphans? That is to say, the people who tend to fall through the cracks, who don't have the resources or the influence to get done what needs to get done. Isaiah says, "Learn to do right. Seek justice, encourage the oppressed, defend the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow." So again, that same idea of God's heart for the people without power, the people that the world would otherwise pass by and pass over without notice, that we need to be concerned, we need to concern ourselves and identify ourselves with those just as Jesus identified himself with us by coming. And John says this in very practical terms: "This is how we know what love is. Christ Jesus laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need, but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth." So that idea of loving in practical terms, in actions, is the idea that motivates us. And I noticed when I walked in, there's a Tim Keller's book out on the book table, Ministries of Mercy, The Call of the Jericho Road. And I want to read a quote from that. It's a little long, but I think it's worth taking the time to hear it, because it really lays out in practical and sort of pushing the envelope kinds of terms how to think about the necessity of works of mercy. He says, and this is from the introduction: "Evangelical Christians are by no means against helping the needy and the hurting. Yet social relief work is generally looked at as a secondary duty. It is something we get to if there is time and money in the budget after we are satisfied with our educational and evangelistic ministries. The parable of the Good Samaritan shatters that set of priorities. Jesus uses the work of mercy to show us the essence of the righteousness God requires in our relationships. Christians are charged to meet physical and economic needs among brethren. This is not optional. If a professing Christian does not do so, how can the love of God be in him? The striking truth is that the work of mercy is fundamental to being a Christian. Mercy to the full range of human needs is such an essential mark of being a Christian that it can be used as a test of true faith, which is quite a statement. Mercy is not optional or additional to being a Christian. Rather, a life poured out in deeds of mercy is the inevitable sign of true faith. So, again, I know I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but I thought that was just such a great summary and statement of why it is that we as followers of Christ need to be engaged in mercy ministry, that I thought I'd read it. Okay, I want to give you a brief history of where did this thing called Kingdom Builders come from. And it started in kind of an unlikely place, because it started in August of 2005 with Hurricane Katrina. So you remember those pictures on TV of this giant storm slamming into the Gulf Coast. And one place that it slammed into was Biloxi, Mississippi. And if you've ever been to Biloxi, you know that it's a beautiful place. You've got the Gulf and the beaches, and then there's a highway along there, and then there's about four or five blocks of houses between the highway, and then there's a railroad embankment, and then the rest of the town is behind that. And on that strip along the Gulf, when Katrina came ashore, basically that first row of houses got picked up and thrown into the second and third and fourth row of houses, so that what you saw was just scraped clean foundations in the first row and just piles of ruined houses the next couple rows, and then some surviving houses in the last row. So our church and many other churches sent a group down there to do some, to help out with the just unbelievable needs that were there. And basically what we were there to do was demolition work, because these houses, it took them about 3 weeks to clear the roads around that area before anybody could even get in there with dump trucks and stuff to clear away all the rubble. And so you got a picture, houses being flooded and then sitting in 90-degree heat for about a month. So you can imagine what those houses looked like. There was mold growing everywhere. It smelled like you wouldn't believe. Refrigerators, I mean, it was. So basically we went down there to rip out moldy carpets and drywall and get ready for the eventual reconstruction. And it was just, 22 of us went down in October, and it was just an amazing week of seeing the love of Christ expressed. Because people, what was really cool about it was people down there, they weren't looking to FEMA so much or to the, because, I mean, everybody was just strapped, you know. I mean, the government was stretched way too thin. FEMA wasn't everywhere it needed to be. But you, everywhere you looked, you saw the church in action. Different denominations, people working together. It was beautiful. So one morning, we were loading up our pickup truck to head out to a job, me and this guy, Tim. And we were waiting for the others to join us. And we looked at each other and we said, boy, this is really an amazing week. Yeah. You know, we should do something like this when we go home. Like, you know, Biloxi, Mississippi it's a technicolor example, but there's needs everywhere on this, doing this kind of stuff. We said, yeah, we should do that. So that was it. That was the idea right there. Like, let's put our practical skills to work where we live. That's a good thing to go and help people in Biloxi, but let's keep it going when we get home. So we came back, and what was cool was the church had really, the 22 of us really felt we were sent by our church and people were invested in it. And we came back and we stood up in front of the church and we told the story of it. And we told this idea, like, we're gonna do this, and we're gonna ask you guys to volunteer, and we're gonna find needs around here, and this is gonna be a thing that we're gonna do. And so people, I think because the church was behind the whole Katrina thing and this group going down, everybody kind of said, yeah, that's a good idea. And so in 2006, we had three work days, Saturday work days. And the first one, the kickoff event, we had all kinds of people coming out. I don't know, it was like 20 to 30 people, and we were really encouraged. And we had a bunch of jobs that we worked on. And then the second day we did, a few months later, there were not quite as many people that came out. And then the third work day we did a couple months after that, there was me and three other people. And we're like, you know, this kind of stinks. We kind of pictured this as something that would live and breathe and, you know, grow and be a thing that continued. The other thing that happened that year was I was basically doing all the, all the work, all the administration, and I'll tell you some of these details later on, but there's just a ton of practical details that go into putting together a work day. And I'm not an administrative guy. You don't want to trust me with that kind of stuff. So stuff was falling through the cracks left, right, and center. And so I'm getting phone calls. Hey, did you get that work request? Maybe. I'm sorry. What was your name again? And some people were getting a little bent because I forgot this and that and the other. And it was stressful. You know, I'm like, boy, this is not quite what I pictured when we were, you know, in Biloxi thinking, like, let's keep doing this. So there's this feeling of kind of discouragement. And I was trying to get other people to help with the leadership. And I want to spend some time more talking about leadership and what it takes. But it takes more than one person, that's for sure. And I was sending out SOSs on a pretty regular basis. And it really wasn't coming together. I wasn't getting a lot of people standing up and saying, yeah, I'm going to do this with you. So that was 2006. That summer, we got a request from another church through some relational connections with people at our church. And I want to tell this story because it illustrates a couple of things, some good and some it illustrates some difficulties and some successes at the same time. So the story was that there was this woman who had a lot of physical needs, who basically had been more or less abandoned by her family, and the church that she was a part of was small, and they weren't really, it was more need than they could handle by themselves. And so there was kind of this SOS that went out, like, could you help? So I heard about it, and I thought, that is exactly the situation that this group exists to address. So I said, yes, absolutely, we'll help you. And so at this point, I had an email distribution list of all the people, you know, from our church who were interested, and I said, I've got a great opportunity, and I detailed it, and I waited for all the emails and phone calls saying, sign me up, what Saturday are we going to do this? One guy, and thank God for Bob, because, you know, Bob's the kind of guy, if you were going to have one, this was the guy you wanted, because he has Home Depot in his basement, he's got every tool ever invented, and all his supplies, and he knows how to build just about anything. So he went over there and he said, yeah, we need to put in a new bathroom. And it was kind of like stuff on that level, which is bigger than we would typically take on. But he basically said, I'm going to do it. I said, okay, that's great. So he went to work on this. And it was basically taking all of his free time. He was working over there. And a couple weeks later, he calls me and he says, look, you got to get me some help. It's just too much. And I said, all right, I will get you some help. So send out the email describing all of this and saying, people got to show up and help Bob here. You know, he's hanging it out there and he's doing a lot of work, but he needs help. Nothing. Nobody. And Bob calls me and he says, yeah, this Kingdom Builders thing, it's a real paper tiger you got going here. You know, I mean, you guys talk a good game, but where is everybody? And I said, yeah, good question. I don't know. So he finished up the whole job by himself. And he did a beautiful job. He basically put a new bathroom in the house for this woman and did a bunch of other stuff for her. So the cool side of all that, the exciting thing was this was a neat partnership with another church and real service to somebody in need. It was real key stuff. But the discouraging thing was, where is everybody? And what, you know, what are we going to, is this just going to die? I mean, that was what I was thinking at that point was, you know, it was a good idea and we did a couple of work days, three of them, plus this project, but that's probably going to be about it. So what happened next in 2007 was that our church in January had a month-long focus on mercy and justice-type ministries. So there was all the preaching was focused on that. People were just talking about it in Sunday school classes. They had a bunch of different ministries, including some of the ones that are here today, come in and set up displays for people to see out in the lobby during church. So people were really exposed to a lot of different practical examples of what mercy ministry looked like, and then a whole bunch of really good teaching about this is why this is key and essential, and like the Tim Keller quote, this is not optional, like we need to be doing this. And I think, you know, that was perfect timing as far as our ministry is concerned, because the next time we had a work day, people went, Okay, it's like class and then lab. Boom, here's a perfect example to put all that teaching into practice. So we were swamped with people the next workday that we did. And it's pretty much, we did that, so that was 2007, and it's been pretty much level since then in terms of the number of people that come out to a workday. You know, over 20 people each time and a good number of jobs, and that's been really good. The other thing that happened was that the leadership really solidified. And there's four of us now. There's one of the deacons at our church, which is really key. Get back to that in a minute. One of the elders of the church actually, which I think represents something else that's really important, which is that the leadership of the church is really behind what we're doing. That's also important. Myself and then one other guy, actually one of the guys that went down to Biloxi with us. So it's at the point now where it's sustainable, because there's a ton to do to put one of these things together, but we've got the skill sets and the people to actually manage it without it being this crazy stress-out thing that, you know, half kills you. It's become a doable, sort of sustainable thing. The other thing that solidified last year was just the process. Like, how do you plan one of these things? How do you organize it, practically speaking? And then the actual day of, what does it look like? Like, how do you do this? So all that stuff is kind of settled down into something that we know how to do. And I'll talk more about what those things look like, that planning and organization and running it. But I think the lessons that we learned out of that two-year period is stuff about what does it take to actually mobilize a group of people, a congregation, to do ministry like this. So the trip to Biloxi, I think, was a key thing, because it provided a concrete, living, breathing example of what it looked like that the church was actually invested in. You know, it wasn't a good movie of somebody else, about what somebody else was doing. It was actually members of the congregation went and did this, and the rest of the church was behind us. So that was really important. But it wasn't kind of enough to sustain it, as the history showed. It kind of, you know, it was good for a first little while, and then it kind of tapered off. But then the second thing that happened was that real strong teaching focus on the necessity of mercy ministry. And that was really key, because I think people really needed to hear that and to understand, you know, as you know, mercy ministry is costly. It's going to cost you time and effort and money and resources that you could spend on a lot of other things. And I think people really needed that strong teaching focus to say, yeah, this is what we need to do. And I think to summarize those two things, I think for this sort of ministry to flourish, mercy has to become part of the vital pulse of the church. That people need to see that this is a key and critical part to following Jesus as individuals and as a congregation together. The other lesson out of that we learned is that leadership for the ministry is really essential. Trying to do it all by yourself isn't going to last very long. You're going to get burned out and grumpy real fast, and it's just not sustainable. You're not going to be able to do it. You need different people with different gifts and different connections within the church. So the diaconal thing, and it's been fantastic having an elder as part of the leadership team as well. The other thing was that we learned, it takes time to figure this stuff out. I mean, the first year it was kind of like, the feeling was like, all right, we jumped out of the airplane, pulled the cord, parachutes open, but the ground's coming up really fast. That's kind of what it felt like. It took time to sort of figure out the details and how to do it well. So we had to have patience with ourselves and say, it's okay. We're going to make some mistakes. You know, we're going to offend some people, and we did. And, you know, but you learn from those things. But on that last point about making mistakes, we needed to be really ready to ask for forgiveness and grace, because there were some times when, you know, especially with this kind of thing, you know, people come to you with these needs, and they might feel, you know, it's a struggle for them to even to ask for the help, and then to forget that they called you. I mean, you know, I had to say, look, I am really sorry. I'm overwhelmed, but that doesn't excuse it. I mean, I shouldn't have done that. So there will be those moments. So that's a little bit of the history of where this came from. And again, feel free, if you have questions, just, you know, jump in, anything you want to hear. No, New Life Presbyterian Church in Dresher. So I said some stuff about leadership and this thing that it's really key to have somebody who's one of the deacons of the church on board. And that was that first year we didn't have a deacon in leadership, and it was really rough, because one of the things about having a deacon as part of the team is that comes with just an awareness of the needs of the church, because the deacons are dealing with that stuff all the time. So there's that just knowledge that they have that feeds into the jobs that we're going to do. And a lot of times when people come for help, I'm going to say more in a little bit about how do you evaluate these requests, because you can't say yes to everything. You shouldn't say yes to everything. A lot of times what's going to help you make those decisions is the fact that the deacons have inside information about the situation. So if a family comes and says, you know, we've got a problem with our roof and we really need somebody to help us do this and or whatever it is, it might be helpful to know why that family is in dire straits financially, what the other factors are that might feed into the decision of whether or not Kingdom Builders is going to help them. And usually the deacons are the ones that have that knowledge. And then when it comes to money stuff, you know, like when we do a work day, there's always a whole bunch of trips to Home Depot and we get a whole bunch of supplies, and it's really good for the diaconal money to have a deacon there as part of the leadership for those decisions, and just makes it a lot easier to have the deacon take care of the money transactions associated with that. But then the other thing about leadership is, and I would say for the scale of what we do, 3 or 4 people is kind of a minimum. And part of that is, honestly, it's just division of labor. I mean, there's so much to do. There's planning and publicity and communications and a ton of email and phone call time and interacting with people requesting help and going out and visiting people and actually looking at the job and estimating, you know, how many people, how many hours, how much materials. A lot of times, you know, it's a one-day thing, right? So a lot of times there's a little bit of prep work. If you can do a little bit of prep work, you make that day so much more effective. So there's the upfront sort of investment of getting stuff prepped so that when 6 people show up at the house, they can roll. So there's just, you know, there's following up with people afterwards. There's a lot of work. So just the division of labor thing, it's important to have enough people to do all that stuff. I want to say a little bit, get back to this diagram, D being diaconate and KB being kingdom builders, and the fact that it's not the same thing, but there is some overlap. I mean, obviously our work is diaconal type work. But one thing that's different is that we're open to the entire church in terms of the people that can help. In fact, we want as many people as possible. It's not a special, you know, it isn't officers of the church, deacons who are ordained to do that work. It's everybody who this is open to. We've got a different scope of projects. When you can get 25, 30 people together, you can take on some big one-day type projects. I'll tell you about one in a little bit that involved 40 gallons of paint being put on the wall in one day. It was just awesome to behold. And also the other thing I would say is that we're able to have more of an outreach focus. And that, for me, honestly, that's one of the things that I'm most excited about with the ministry, is that we want to be, and we have had some examples of this actually happen, where we want to be a resource to the church, where people know what we do, and so they're able to go to their neighbor and say, hey, Mrs. Jones, I know you've been having trouble around the house. I've got a bunch of friends at church who would love to to come over and help you out with that. Would that be something you'd be interested in? And we've had people say yes to offers like that who had never before been willing to accept help. And it's just been, it's been really cool to see God use our ministry to build bridges between neighbors, and to really see opportunities for the gospel grow out of those types of things. So those outreach possibilities are something I think that we can really focus on, maybe more than typical diaconal type work. So you make it, yes?
What makes the work that you guys do is for people in the church and people out versus people outside the church?
It's probably, it's mostly within the church. Again, it depends on the workday. Some days we've had more of the outreach type thing, but it's probably, if you average it out, it's probably about 3-1. And I would like to see that. I would like to see the outreach portion of that grow, and it's something that we talk about in the leadership group of how to make that happen. Yes.
Does the if the need is A, does it matter if it's for someone within the church or without a church, outside of the church? Does that affect your likelihood of, you know, adding that to the workday?
Yes, that's a good question. So that gets to this thing of how do you evaluate these requests that come in? Pretty much, if I know that it's an unbeliever who's asking for help, I'm going to say yes no matter what. I don't care if you live in a $1 million mansion. Because I really, those opportunities of living out the gospel in front of people, I think are just so valuable. So, and again, relating to your question, we haven't had a whole ton of those. So it hasn't really been an issue where we've said, well, in order to do this request, we're going to have to say no to somebody over here. We haven't actually had it come to that to that point. But sort of in theory, the way I think about it, I always want to say yes to those requests. It's all within our church. We have a work day coming up, we'll have a bulletin insert and, you know, announcements from the front, and generally make it known, you know, at least a month, 6 weeks in advance, to people.
And you just say this is the work day.
Yeah.
Let us know if you want us to come and do something.
Yeah, so I'll pass these around. These are bulletin inserts that we've done. So On the back side it describes ways that you can be involved, and do you know somebody who has a need? And then the other side is a sign up where people can sign up for a need that they themselves have. So you just 3 or 4. You just sort of circulate these around if I have any more of them. I just brought a few of them. So in terms of it getting out into the community, typically that would happen through people in the church, you know, going to their neighbors, their coworkers, their friends, and saying, hey, our church is doing this. Do you have a need? So we don't sort of advertise in the community at large. Yeah?
Do you ever get sponsorship from Pure Go Out for sponsorship, like for materials or things you might need to do that project?
Yeah, it does. We've thought about that. We haven't yet done it. There's one, I don't know if any of you were at Eileen Barclay's talk, the Late Ministries workshop, which was the last session. That's a place that we go just about every time that we have a work day. And it's an old house that has many needs, one of which is there's old windows that are leaky that also have lead paint on them. So that's a big need. And I've thought about going to Home Depot and saying, describing the ministry and saying, would you donate windows for this house? Because I don't know how many windows are there in that house, Jerry? 35 or something?
A million.
Yes, approximately a million. It would be tens of thousands of dollars to replace all the windows. I mean, typically
Probably easier to go to the window manufacturer.
Or the window manufacturer.
Because I think I've gone to Home Depot before, and they get inundated with requests.
I've heard that they have a certain amount of money that, so if you want to get to them like January 2nd, because, you know, once the money for the year is gone, it's gone.
But the window manufacturer, though, it might be easier that way.
That's a good idea.
For Home Depot, it would cost them more money.
Right. Yeah. Typically, the money expenditure for a workday that we do is not that large. I mean, it's usually a couple $100 in miscellaneous bits and pieces. You know, when you're fixing somebody's leaky faucet or patching some drywall or fixing a light that doesn't work. They're usually small ticket kind of items. Probably the biggest one that we've had is that 40 gallons of paint, that story, which I'll just tell the story because it's a cool story, rather than keep you waiting. One of the things that we like to think about is connecting with people who have real extraordinary needs in their families. So there's this one family at our church. They have a boy who is autistic, which means that the wife can't work anymore because she pretty much has to be devoted to looking after him. She used to work, so the family's finances obviously were really impacted by that. The husband had a business, was an auto parts business that was really struggling, which he sold. And then they took basically all their money, all their seed money out of his business and finances that they had and purchased an apartment building. It's an old three-story building, and the idea was that this was going to be generate income for them. Well, they ran into all these horrendous stuff with the township and zoning, all this stuff that they did not foresee at the beginning. And they were at a point where they were about to lose the property if it wasn't ready to be rented by a certain date. And there was just no way that they could do that on their own. And one of the things that had to happen was the whole place had to be painted. So one of the cool things about our group is we've got some contractors and some professionals in the group, and we've got four professional painters. So we did a work day and we got all of those guys and four or five other people over there, and we painted the whole place all in one day. Primer, finish coat, done. And that was, you know, it was a lot of paint. So that was in terms of money, but that money came out of diaconal funds. So I like your idea about looking out elsewhere, especially for bigger projects like that, and that's definitely something we want to look into. Yes?
Could you expand a little bit on your diagram there where the diaconal, where to understand the diaconal sphere and then the kingdom building sphere, they overlap, and there's this area where they overlap. Now, is that within the church itself, or, you know, as we're understanding this theme of mercy and outreach, mm-hmm. you know, what would your, how would you view outreach and what you have there at the diagram, and, you know, coming into play? I mean, are we talking about being aware of needs that are within the church, or are we looking towards somehow actively, you know, as kingdom builders address what's outside in the community?
Yeah. I guess the answer is both. This piece in here, this overlap piece, that's been things, like stuff that's on the diaconate's radar screen. The way our diaconate's set up, there's a helps committee that deals with the sort of things that we do. But typically they're swamped and they've got more than they can handle, so we can pick up that stuff. So we can take that stuff off of them and help them out with that.
So in other words, more of contractor, what services a contractor could provide, take some of that stuff off the deacon's plate to actually do it.
Yeah, some of it's been like that, like stuff that the diaconate otherwise would have spent money to hire a contractor to maybe to take care of those needs. We've been able to take
care
of.
Like an in-house contractor service in a sense.
In a sense, although I got a phone call one time of somebody who sort of misunderstood what we were about, who wanted me to do an addition on their house. So this is this thing of like, you got to say no to people sometimes. And I said, no, that's, we don't do that. No, that's not what we're about. But in terms of the outreach focus, I mean, that's this piece out here, and that we really see as we want to equip and empower groups within the church, whether that's small group Bible studies, whether it's a men's group or a women's group, or families, or even individuals, to know that we're there as a resource, so that when they see those needs in their relational networks, they can say, hey, would you, they can serve as a relational bridge between that need that's out there in the community and us. So that's how we like to see that, yeah.
I have two thoughts on this. One, I kind of like this idea. We've been trying to reach, we're in Pittsburgh, we're in the ghetto area.
Uh-huh.
And we've started a kids' own ministry to reach kids, but we're trying to reach the single mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one guy that I haven't kind of mentioned for 5 years, and his parents are crack addicts, and mm-hmm. the mother's starting to come to church, but the father isn't yet. He's related to, he says he's related to half the drug dealers in Homewood. But we've built friendships with him. We're thinking, how do we help him more? I figure, we start going by his house, mm-hmm. and helping him with projects. Maybe, I really like the idea of multiple work days, and this can help us. It ties in with our prison ministry plus kids ministry. We try to reach the single parent families, so
uh-huh.
that could really help connect a lot of dots for us.
Yeah. The other thing related to that, and this gets to some organizational stuff about running a work day, is we'll divide up into teams. The people that we have coming in, we'll divide up into teams, and we'll have a team captain or foreman or whatever who's sort of in charge of running things for that day, for that group of people, for that project. And so, like in that situation where there's a relational connection, we'll always try to make that the person who is connected with that person the team leader, so that they're going to show up and knock on the door and say, this is Bob and Sally and Joe, my friends, we're going to work on your house, as opposed to some strangers showing up and knocking. So that's something that's worked out well in terms of, especially in those situations where it's outside the church.
The other idea that we personally did this last summer, maybe this could help you be something for you guys. We have a summer mission team that comes from around the world. Maybe we get 4 to 10 people, and we have them for 5 to 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we often take them through EE. We compress them through evangelism training.
Uh-huh.
We also do some work projects. And this last summer, we boarded up 6 homes right within a block of the church.
Mm-hmm.
But if we take this concept the next part further, okay, let's evaluate requests for homes and then do some of that, organize some work days while they're here. That might work. And maybe that's something, I don't know if you guys do the summer mission trips. That may be a way to combine a few of your ministries together.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, that's one of sort of a area of growth that we'd like to look into is exactly that sort of thing, is connecting with other ministries. And one of the things that's coming up for our next work day is going to be in March sometime. I have to pick that date soon. but there's a bunch of short-term mission stuff that's going on, trips that are going out from the church to a bunch of different places. And one of the people who's organizing that came to me and said, we'd like to do a fundraiser for people to help sponsor these folks to go on their trips around the world. So could we do a workathon that's connected with a work day, where we get a bunch of the people who are going on the trips and others sponsor them, and they go on your cruise and do work on the work day. So that's another way it can happen.
So one family in our church did a work day like that, where they hired the church to build a garage, two-door garage, and they paid just the cost rate, people from the church did it, and then they gave that money to the church.
Uh-huh.
So it was lower than what they'd pay if they did straight to contractors, but it was served as both the fundraiser, plus the family saved the money, plus the people worked together as a church.
Right. This is related to what you just said. One of the difficulties about doing something like this is you get people come out to work days who have all different skill levels with things, and so you got to be careful with who you send where, and it's key to have a good sort of team leader in charge of that. So typically the guys who do that are the ones who are either contractors or really super handy, because you don't want to have a situation where you go over to somebody's house and they screw it up, and it ends up worse than before. That would be really bad. So that's important. Yeah.
I had a question along those lines. It's ugly, practical. Do you have to a place and they break a window.
Right.
In just a very practical sense, are you separated from the church in such a way that there's no liability there?
I don't know. We haven't really... thank God we haven't had a situation where we went, what do we do, you know?
Yeah.
It's probably a good thing to think about. I don't know the answer to that.
That's why Habitat doesn't allow volunteers under 18.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that you'd at least want to get a release from whoever's the object of your diaconate work.
Right.
They're saying, yeah, we understand that this is under these things, but I just, this is a practical thing.
Yeah, no, it's, that's good to think about. And I think you had...
Yeah, about the getting stuff donated, materials and stuff.
Yeah.
I was part of an extreme makeover that New Life did for DeMoss's.
Uh-huh.
And they had Barb Oeschleg, who just went around and got all kinds of stuff donated. I'm talking thousands of dollars.
Like from businesses, from Home Depot type places, or?
Businesses, and I mean people... Once they knew what the need was, and that they had this kid who had all kinds of problems, and I mean, people were throwing stuff at me.
Hmm.
And you got to have somebody who's dynamic and who can go out and give the businesses, you know, the vision. Okay, if you give us this stuff, we're going to give you some really good publicity. And but people just bent over backwards to make it happen.
That's interesting. I mean, that's kind of at a bigger scale than we've operated on. I mean, I can see that with bigger type projects where that would be, and maybe we'll get there. I don't know. We'll see.
Well,
yeah.
You just to piggyback on that, you just have to be careful that you don't jeopardize the 501c3 status that the church is at. There's, I don't know.
Yeah.
If you have an accountant in your church that can deal with that, you just have to be careful. How it's set up to get big time donations and stuff like that.
Right.
But anyway, my question was, do you do some type of like talent inventory so you know, I'm assuming you have like a volunteer list.
Yeah.
Somehow, can you give any ideas on how that was initially
mm-hmm.
developed, other than you know you go to the contractors that are in the church and say, hey, who do you know that's handy?
Yeah, that's a good question. When we were first getting started, we sent out emails, you know, inviting people and these flyers, the bulletin inserts and stuff like that. When I got a list of emails together, I sent an email out to everybody that basically said, tell me what you can do. You know, what's your key area of expertise? And people responded back so that I had a pretty good idea of that sort of thing.
So you had general interest and then beyond that, some type
yeah.
of communication
yeah.
to get the extra layer of information.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned that you have maybe 20 or so people come out to your work day
mm-hmm.
and stuff. Is it usually the same people, or is there a lot of different, like, you can't make this month, maybe next month?
Yeah.
It's like different people get...
Certain people are always there.
Yeah, but you do have some, like, different people.
Yeah. So, I mean... I don't know, at last count, our mailing, our email distribution list is 40-some of people who are interested. We might get half of those people come out, but it's going to be a different subset each time, probably, with some regulars.
Do you ever use some of your skills and your people to do work at the church property, like itself, on any maintenance or anything at the church building? Or anything?
No, we haven't, and that's been a deliberate decision on our part not to do that.
Oh, okay, then who does that?
That's a good question. We just built a new building.
Someday.
Oh no, believe me, there was stuff going wrong. Like as the contractor was walking out the front door, the back door was falling. Any building, right? But yeah, I know that people. There's maintenance that's done. That's contracted. We felt like you know that's. That's good stuff to do, but that's not the vision of who
right.
we want to serve, how we want to use our time. Yeah.
When you go to do a project for somebody, is there a definitive moment where you kind of say, "Black is better"? You're going to give them the gospel in exchange. If you understand my meaning, like
okay, you're going to go out and do this good thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're going to appreciate it. But is there an understanding going into it that we're doing this for the Lord, this is for the gospel, and we want to be able to give you the gospel here?
There isn't a one size fits all answer to that. I mean, one of the things actually when we were down in Biloxi that was really neat that we would try to do for every job that we went on, at some point during the day, and it was easy there because people were devastated. I mean, we would say, "Can we pray for you?" And people were usually really receptive to that. And people also just wanted to talk. I mean, there was one lady, they found bodies in her backyard. I mean, she just wanted to talk about that. She was traumatized by that, you know? And as much as we did in our house, I think it was really important that we just sat down and listened to her. And that's been part of our experience here as well. I mean, there was one time we were at a job, and there were four or five of us, and the house was in pretty bad shape. There was a whole laundry list of mainly small things that we were going through. And one guy, he sat down with the lady who lived there, and he spent the entire time just talking to her. And that was so important that he did that. And so I guess, you know, there's those opportunities for conversation. We don't sort of have an expectation like, you know, before we leave, we're going to have presented a gospel outline or anything like that. I mean, it's kind of like you take opportunities as those opportunities as they come, I guess. Somebody?
Yes. Do you have any high school age kids get involved?
Yeah, we have, depending on the job. I mean, again, you got to be careful. In fact, my son, who's 12, was with us. We were working on a roof and, you know, stripping. And of course, he wanted to be at the highest point in the house, you know. And I said, "You're staying on the ground." Well, we're throwing all this stuff off the roof, and he ends up on the ground. He stepped on, there was a shingle that landed like this with a nail sticking up, and he stepped on it and got a puncture wound and had to take him and get a tetanus shot. So, I mean.
I haven't seen it at the top. Just a follow-up. Should you do that? Should you do any skills training for that age?
That's, you know, this is something we've thought about. I want to look for opportunities to do that in the future, because it seems like a really great mentoring opportunity, you know, especially for kids who are interested in that sort of thing, to have them come along and, you know, they learn some skills, they get to see the body of Christ in action. Again, these are things we've talked about that we haven't really done a whole lot with. I mean, there have been the occasional kid who's come along, you know, dads and sons will come out together, that kind of thing. But I like the idea of a more deliberate, you know, like involve the youth group kind of thing. And I know, like we've been saying, there's another level of things you got to worry about with all that. But I'd like to see that be something we do more. Yes.
Do you walk through like the types of projects that you do, and even your selection process? Like, here's the how do you plan on what? If you got 20 people, do they all work on one site, or do you split them up on? Okay, we've got these types of projects. We're going to send 3 here, 4 here, 5 there.
Yeah, that's how it goes. So we split them up into teams. And again, this is different every time. And it's weird. There have been these themes. So there was this period of time where every single job had at least one plumbing issue. And we've got a couple of plumbers on the crew, but these guys, I'm like, all right, I've got you two guys that I need to get you here, 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 and here. So they were sort of roving. Like they would, you know, do that toilet over there, then jump in your truck and drive over here and fix that shower. You know, so it was specific skill people like that you might need to spread around that way. But the typical thing, how a work day looks, everybody shows up at the church on a Saturday morning. We typically have breakfast together and have a little devotional time, and then everybody gets their work assignments, divide into groups, and head out for the day. We'll have a, in fact, I can pass this around. We'll have a list that has all the team leaders, the address where they're going, the phone number, everybody who's on that crew, and then all the team leaders have that so that everybody can be in contact with each other. Just pass that around. Yes?
Mike, you have your email address up there. Some of these things, for example, are these things that if one wanted to just follow up with you,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and on that topic, I mean, if anybody here is in the process of starting something like this or thinking of starting something like this, you know, feel free to call or email. If you want to come out to one of our work days, if you want to come out to one of our planning sessions to see what the chaos looks like as we're trying to madly sort through all this stuff at the last second, that would be great. So feel free. Anything I can do to help in that regard, I'd love to do. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay.
Is it worth like a whole day?
You know, I mean, typically what happens is it'll depend on the job. I mean, one crew might be done by noon, another crew might be working all day. One thing that we've only done this once, because it was just more logistics, and I think we'll do this maybe once a year, but I think we're going to have one work day a year where everybody comes back to the church afterwards, and we eat dinner together and sort of debrief and talk about the day. Because it's really cool to hear the stories, you know? And again, that was something when we were down in Biloxi, every day we'd come back and have dinner together and talk about it. And those were some of the most encouraging times, just to hear how everybody, I mean, maybe you'd had a tough day slogging through black mold and were discouraged, and then you could hear somebody else's story about how they shared the gospel with somebody or something, you know? So, you know, maybe we'll, it's more logistics and expense to do that, but probably once a year we'll do that. But on a typical day, people, you know, at a given site finish up and then everybody goes home, whatever time they're done. Sometimes, if we've got a bunch of little jobs, we'll have a crew that'll do this one, then this one, then this one, like that. Yeah?
Do the places, how do you fund, all the supplies, et cetera, that's required for this?
It hasn't been an issue. It's come out of diaconal money. You know, we haven't had an issue where it was just, you know, it was too much or anything. That it's always been within bounds of what's available. What time does this end, by the way? Four? Okay. Yeah.
In terms of Kingdom Builders interfacing with the diaconal, when it comes to budget time, as you're now just in the process of figuring out how this is unfolding for you,
yeah.
How about in terms of budgetary concerns or things, your input, for example, in light of this is a ministry that's maybe starting to take off and develop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you do the budget there in terms of how deacons, if they put forward some items for the elders to consider as they're pulling their budget together. But does Kingdom Builders provide a number for this project?
Typically, no, we don't. I mean, we don't have a budget. It's typically, it's a lot more provisional than that. Typically, I mean, you know, a lot of times it's going to be hard to estimate ahead of time how much is this going to cost. I mean, a lot of times, here's a typical thing that happens: you show up to fix the faucet and you discover eight other things that are wrong. So there's a lot of times there's that trip to Home Depot. The four people there that say, okay, we three are going to do this, you run to Home Depot and get this laundry list of stuff. So it's kind of hard.
Yeah, even. I'm wondering whether that, with a little history, you might find yourself having more and more of at least the feel and say.
Yeah, we might get there where we sort of have, you know, typical work day, we can say we'll cost X amount and then budget for that, but we're not at this point, no.
Do you have the homeowner ever get involved in the actual work?
Yes. Yeah.
We had the privilege to put a drainage roof on our own church.
Uh-huh.
And over a weekend or something. And what we ended up having was somebody who was in a halfway house come help us. And
mm-hmm.
For him, it was good because for us, it was labor.
Mm-hmm.
It was helpful for the relationship with the church. And it was good for them to be able to work off some of their time.
Right.
But it worked out very well for everybody involved. It was a great opportunity. The guy read the gospel all day long.
Uh huh.
So that's just something that there may be a way to overlap some of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really good as much as possible if you can involve the people with, you know, obviously, you never want to do this thing of coming in there like, we're here to help, you know, stand aside or anything like that. I mean, as much to the extent, the greatest extent that you can make it a partnership, you know, the better. So I think, and we have had plenty of times where people have, especially, I mean, you know, like yard work kind of stuff, even somebody who doesn't have specific skills like, you know, doing plumbing or something like that, if it's general labor stuff, typically people pitch in. And then the other thing along those lines is I've thought, you know, the old give a man a fish, he eats for a day, teach him to fish, he can eat for a lifetime. I mean, I'd like to see us grow in, you know, you're there helping somebody, teach them the skills. I mean, teach them how to change the washers on a faucet. So that next time it's dripping, they fix it themselves. I'd like to see that be something that we are sort of consciously thinking about, you know, involving people we're helping in that way. I wanted to mention something that we've learned that's been really key, and that's the idea of follow-up. And, you know, one of the I don't know, downsides or what you want to call it, but a ministry where you're doing like a one-day thing, I mean, think about your house. How many things around your house can be begun, finished, wrapped, completed in one day? I mean, most things like stretch into, you're putting up a piece of drywall, you can screw it up and do the first tape it, but then you got to sand it and come back and it's, you know. So that was, that when we initially started, the focus was so much on getting that one day to happen that when it was over, we all kind of, but then you've got people who you've just started with, what about that? So we've definitely, I think we've grown in that, in the ability to follow up. And so you've got those 40 people on your mailing list, you get 25 of them out, you shoot an email to the other 15 and say, hey, how about in the next couple of weeks, some follow-up with one of the jobs? And we've done some stuff like that. And also with the idea of discovering further needs while you're there. So there's a family in our church where the husband had an aneurysm a number of years ago and is paralyzed and can't speak. And obviously his wife is, you know, caring for him is pretty much full time, even with outside help, which they have. But stuff around the house has gone by the wayside. So, you know, we were over there one time to do some specific things, and we found that there was broken up concrete in the back, and they needed a new ramp because the wheelchair wasn't good. What they had wasn't good for the wheelchair. So we put together a group that came back a few months later and poured the concrete for a new walkway. So just that kind of like awareness of you're there doing stuff, keep eyes open for other needs and, you know, thinking for future work days and also for more immediate follow-up if it's a pressing need. I wanna tell you some stories of how when we've had to say no, because those are tough. I mentioned the addition that somebody wanted us to build on our house. That was kind of an easy one. You get people sort of just misunderstanding the mission. So we had a guy at church come up to us and say, hey, I hear you guys do work around people's houses. So I want you to come clean the leaves out of my gutters. This is somebody who owned a ladder, was, you know, perfectly healthy, and on top of that, if you had money, if you wanted to hire somebody to do that. So we had to say, no, that's, you know, this doesn't fit with what we're all about. He got really, really bent. He got really, really upset at us. You're supposed to be helping people. I mean, and you're telling me no? What's up with that? And it wasn't actually me. It was one of the other guys in leadership who fielded that one. But he just, you know, he stayed cool and he said, yeah, but we're here to help people who can't do it themselves, and you can. Those conversations aren't the easiest to have. The other thing that's tough is you have to evaluate finances sometimes. You have to say, you know, could this person actually hire somebody? And it, you know, it can feel awkward and like you're being really hard-nosed. But the thing is, if you say yes to everybody, you're going to end up having to say no to some bigger needs. So it's really, I mean, to stay on mission like that, I think is really the loving thing to do for the people that you're there to serve. And, you know,
do your deacons do an intake? Do they sit down?
assessment?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much, I mean, in terms of if somebody comes and they're asking for money, yes, they always do that. For us, if somebody comes to us, that's not an automatic thing. I mean, there have been times when there's been situations where I've wondered, should we say yes to this? And I, through our guy, our deacon that's on our leadership, I said, hey, could you check out, do you know anything about this family? Like, what's the story? And, you know, he was able to come back and say, here's the situation. Yeah, like, whatever you can do for them, do it. So, I mean, that's that key thing of having that diaconal input there. Yeah. But
what do you do about multiple projects that might, you know, some a needy family, but a project that might go over one day? Just a couple of days of follow up.
It depends how pressing it is. I mean, certain things, like for instance, Eileen Barclay's light ministry's house is one where I just assume we're going to go there every single time we have a work day. And I said, give me a list of every single thing you want done. If you could press a button and your house would be done, what would it look like? What is it? You know, so I've got this document that's all these pages of, so we're going to, you know, we're just going to peck away at that. If it's urgent stuff that needs doing, you know, we can follow up on that, but you know, a lot of times that would be a conversation with the diacon of like, look, we went over there and we took care of some things, but they've got all this other stuff. Maybe we should have a contractor go and do that if it needs to get done like